And welcome back to another week of Behind the Lens. It's November. Can you believe it's November already? Wow. I'm Debbie Elias, film critic, creator, and host of Behind the Lens, where we go behind the lens and below the line with all those movers and shakers, the film and TV makers, the producers, directors, writers, actors, cinematographers, production designers, editors, film editors, sound mixers, VFX gurus, composers, authors, you name it. We're talking to them. And if anybody's been checking the website, behindthelensonline.net, you'll see there's a whole slew of new interviews up there for you. Two of which definitely are a precursor for awards. That is Will Files, who was sound designer on Jason Reitman's fabulous movie, Saturday Night, and also Steve Newburn, who, and people, I encourage you so strongly, it's on Paramount Plus, might be on some other platforms as well, Sasquatch Sunset. There is no dialogue. It's an observation over the year over three Bigfoots. And absolutely astounding. The Sasquatch are played by Riley Keough, Jesse Eisenberg, and then two others. David Zellner is the alpha male of this family group, and then a child. Absolutely stunning. Stunning. I was mesmerized, and Steve's work. This is the one time where hair and makeup and prosthetic body suits, every frame of the film, every frame is the work of Steve and his team and what he went through to design these suits, make them functional. Because with no dialogue, these actors really have to act, and they have to act in a mammalian sense. Shot out in Humboldt County, it's just, his work, it's just jaw-droppingly fantastic. So he is definitely on the awards radar in the next coming months. But for all of you, the film is out. Please do yourself a favor and see it. It is so stunning. And it's wonderful when you have a film you don't need dialogue for. You're just observational. You're watching. It's almost like you're an anthropologist watching. Very, very cool film from the Zellner brothers and Steve Newburn's work as hair and makeup designer. And on Saturday Night, Will Files, you know, in addition to his work, sound design, on Saturday Night, he also, White Bird and the Bike Riders. So Will has had a spectacular year so far, and it's not over. And with the nuance that he brings to Saturday Night and the Bike Riders in particular, I could easily see both of those being in awards contention with the guilds, and with the Academy. So stay tuned, because we're going to have a lot more awards, interviews, and stuff coming up in the coming months. But as for today's show, in a few minutes, we should have writer-director Anthony Rapinski joining us to talk about his horror film, Heather. It is brutal, brutal horror. And I can't wait to talk to Anthony about it, because as brutal as it is, it's fascinating. And at the midpoint of the show, we were hoping to have him live, but unfortunately, due to logistics, he couldn't be live. So, Zach Gruber, writer-director of Sallywood, I did a pre-record with him on Halloween just for today's show. And Zach is so much fun. The film Sallywood is so much fun. And it stars, of course, Sally Kirkland as Sally Kirkland. And there is only one Sally. So I can't wait for you to hear that interview. later on in the show. But first, we've got Anthony Pham. All right, so let's bring him on, and a big welcome to Anthony Rapinski. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, good morning or afternoon.
I don't know what it is. Time change, clocks changed. It's something. It's sometime in the course of 24 hours.
Oh, I know. I was wondering, is it weird on your end that this sound? For some reason, you're very low on my end.
Uh-oh. Pham, can we do something about that? Because you sound fine on our end going out live.
Perfect.
But every once in a while, it happens. She's making some adjustments now. Is that any better?
You know what? I could probably hear through it.
Because normally, and I speak very loudly, so I can even speak louder.
Okay, no worries.
So, what a film, Anthony.
Thank you.
You know, it's brutal. They're horrific, but you cannot look away from this film. It is just so compelling and so mesmerizing. You cannot look away from it. You just blew me away with what you did, because at the same time, you've got some great cinematic elements. You've got your cinematographer, Matthew Nardone, did an amazing job, because the bulk of this film is in, let's face it, a homemade dominatrix dungeon in a basement. And it ain't big.
Pretty much.
And there's not a lot of space. So not a lot of room to navigate and move around. But just mind-blowing. Where, Dahlia, now I know that this is actually inspired by a true story that you were told by someone who was bullied in high school. And if anybody wants to see what bullying will do, see this movie. What led you to want to turn that story you were told into a film?
You know, I think like anything, I don't really, you know, choose what I write in a sense. I mean, you obviously do, but you know, it's in something that just sticks with your mind, for a while, or in this case, when it was first told to me, I just couldn't let it go. So I started to just, you know, started writing and seeing what I can come out of writing. And again, it's inspired. It's not, you know, that woman's true story. If it was, then there'd be a lot more chaos. It'd probably be in the news and everything else like that. So I created the story based off the true story. The elements within this person's story, I kind of used and thought, well, what if it went this direction? Like, what if it didn't happen the way it did, and it took a couple of turns? This is what could have happened very easily. So that's where it came from. And I don't know. It was just so interesting to me, because I didn't know that side of the world at all. You know, this is one of those things where, you know, you're writing not what you know, but really what you feel. So, you know, I had to talk to a lot of people, a lot of research, if I can do this correctly. I just felt I had to write it.
Well, you did a heck of a job writing it, but the thing that stands out for me the most with the way you have written this, we really do get a condensed character study of three individuals, of Heather, Travis, and Robbie. And it's so interesting to watch the tables turn and emotional tides change in the course of this film. That really stood out and struck me. And talk about 2020 hindsight. We see that unfold in Travis's character, who did the bullying back in high school. Of course, the fact that people are going to let it linger for, what, another 15 years after high school? Okay.
Of course.
But we all know somebody who's like that, I'm sure. Yeah. But to see that journey, that character journey, particularly Travis's and Heather's, is just amazing. Robbie, I think he's clearly just a nut job.
Yeah, you get, I mean, he also got pushed a lot, obviously, you can tell that, and you get you know, shoved around or kind of squeezed for so long, eventually it's going to catch up to you, you know, eventually you're going to crack.
Yeah, but watching their story unfold, you could have just made this a quote-unquote slasher film, a really hardcore, this side of a snuff film. You could have just done that, but you didn't. And that impresses me so much, Anthony.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that wasn't really my style. I'm not much of a slasher film kind of a guy at all. You know, if the characters aren't compelling, you know, in the way they are, then we just don't care. You know, like any slasher film, you know, we look for the blood, the gore. We don't care about the characters are happening to. We're just waiting for it. When you actually care about the characters, it means something when something happens to them. You actually feel for them now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just an element just to enjoy.
Yeah, and you definitely achieve that here. You definitely, by the time we get into the third act with all the machinations and the emotional wrangling that is happening, you definitely feel something, and you feel empathy. Empathy for Caitlin, for Heather and Travis, most definitely. Maybe somebody will feel something for Robbie. I'm not sure about that, though.
he's a good actor.
Yes. Colin Bates does an amazing job going off the rails. All of your actors. I mean, you open the film, Sean Young, wonderful, wonderful get and a perfect way to open a film. And your opening scenes are just gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Thank you.
And then we meet, and of course we meet Travis at that point. Then we meet Heather and Robbie. And as we move from the beauty of the initial scenes to Heather's home, there's you've got a definite color shift happening, a tonal shift that really conveys through the color and the lighting, going from the vibrant night at Caitlin's house to Heather's with the dim light, the almost the sickly green, pale green walls. And then we get into the basement. It's a free-for-all, which is
very isolating,
which is where your production designer David Butler did an amazing job.
He did
with that, you know. Once you have this story on the page, you have this great cast, and Pooya Mosseni as Heather is outstanding. Mm-hmm. I've seen her in a few other things, and she is just wonderful. But how did you start to break this down from a directorial standpoint, a production standpoint, working with Matthew, your cinematographer, and working with David on what you wanted and needed for the production design?
Well, I mean, it starts off with just sort of my looks and a lot of inspirations that I was looking at, and just giving the visuals. Examples that I wanted, you know, based on other things that I'd seen that would work. And they did a great job in trying to recreate that. A lot of sketching went into this because, you know, that entire, you know, that's an entire set. That's just not a, you know, a real basin, obviously. I mean,
yeah.
I think it is. But we're talking about an entire set on a soundstage to recreate this. We had all the room that we needed to make it work. And, you know, it was a lot of, you know, back and forth sketching. You know, on what I was really needing to convey that sort of eerie atmosphere, but also give it that normality. Like this could happen to anybody's place. There's nothing special about this basement in a sense than what you would see somewhere else. But it's what we would normally see when bad things are going to happen. So yeah, it was a lot of that. It's just a lot of my own, you know, visual, you know, acuities that I was kind of conveying to the team there. They did a hell of a job, you know, bringing that to life.
Absolutely amazing. Now, you've got your set done. You've got your cast. Working with Matthew, were you shot listing? Were you storyboarding? How did you develop the visual grammar with Matthew? Because, you know, we feel the claustrophobia. It looks it's very contained. Everything is pretty much within an arm's reach. There's the main table in the middle that poor Travis spends a lot of his time on. But still, everything is pretty much within an arm's length of everything else in there. So that's not giving you a lot of room to navigate. Plus, you've got very specific, almost theatrical lighting happening in there. So I'm curious about your work with Matthew and how the two of you developed that visual grammar.
Well, I mean, you know, this is actually the first time I've worked with him in a recommendation. And then, you know, after interviewing him, you know, one of the most important things to realize is, okay, you need somebody who could read your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it seems a little difficult. They kind of have to, because we're going to go quick. We're going to go fast. You know, there's not a lot of time in production. You know, we got like an ultra low budget, you know, film.
Yep.
And so right from the very beginning, you know, it's like I had to make sure that he can articulate everything that I was telling to him, you know, visually, and he knew what I was talking about. And then we did a couple test shots here and there. And then we got on the set, you know, with David Butler's design, with everything, it was exactly what we were looking for and what we were needing. He did a hell of a job setting the whole thing up. So from there, you know, I think we had it pretty solid. I mean, everything that I wanted, I was given by him, and he was very good at accommodating every changes that I made on the slot. He's very quick. And that's one of the things you have to do, is be extremely quick in some of these low budget things, because you don't have the time or the money to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. So great attention to detail by him and his team to making sure we're always constantly moving with these shots.
Mm-hmm. You know, how long was your shoot?
It wasn't long. I mean, we're talking like, it was less than 3 weeks. So it was so extreme. We were probably shooting, I think we were averaging 10 pages a day. We're going to 15 pages a day on some days.
Wow.
Which is absurd. It's completely crazy.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah, so luckily the tone of the film kind of helped in that sense, because everybody's exhausted. The actors are exhausted, which actually really helped out with their emotionality throughout the film, because it kind of showed. I mean, they're all exhausted. We're shooting 15 hours a day.
Wow. Now, once you get this, and these are very physically demanding roles, especially for Travis, for Nick's character of Travis, and for Puya's character of Heather. Very, very physically demanding, especially for poor Nick. You really put him through the ringer as Travis.
He did go through a lot.
Oh, my God. Did he get hazard pay? I'll tell you, he deserved hazard pay.
I don't think we had any money for hazard pay. I mean, I took every precaution to make it as comfortable as possible.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so much you can do. But I knew the position he'd be in for hours was not going to be fun for him, but I didn't need it to be fun for him. I needed to be irritating for him. I needed to be annoying. I needed to be angry, and everything coming to the surface emotionally. So I was like, well, this is going to help. This is really going to help.
Yes. It definitely did help. And of course, I have to congratulate you on your blood work. Great blood work in Heather. I love how you judiciously give us blood, you know, a cut here, a knife slice there, but then you go all out at one point. And it's just, but it's done so well. And the blood is so color appropriate for the parts of the body where it's coming from. And I mean, that's
surprisingly,
that's just a little thing that most people won't notice. But no, you had the proper color of blood for the different parts of the body.
Yeah, I mean, with a lot of that, I'm not much of a shock and awe kind of person, even though it may not seem that way sometimes. But I'm not. There has to be a reason for everything, especially with any kind of gore there. You know, not much of like, let's a surprise, let's do this for a spectacle. It's like no. For me, it's more realism. What is it really going to do? What's someone really going to do here? What's going to happen here? And make it part of the story and not go off the rails and trying to impress and to contain it to just what you need just to get the story across and the emotion.
Mm-hmm. Well, you definitely achieved that. Now, when you got into the editing bay with your editor, John Scott Cook, how challenged was the edit on this one? This comes in at a tight, you know, it's tightly cut. It keeps moving. There really is little breathing room in here because everything is happening so fast that you're trying to, you know, Travis is trying to wrap his head around it. Heather's trying to wrap her head around what's happening, especially when Robbie appears on the scene. How challenging was this edit? Because you want to keep us on tenterhooks. You don't want to show too much too soon. And you want to keep building to those climactic turn of events when we hit Act 3. So how challenging was that edit for you?
Well, it is very challenging because, you know, I mean, to be honest, the first cut of the film was about 40 minutes longer than what it is right now. So you start there and you realize, oh, this isn't going to work. It's not going to work at all. This can't have a start and then kind of slowly progress and do, it's like, no. Once you hit the ground, you got to keep running with this from start to finish. We cut out about 40 minutes of the story in a lot of ways, just so it would feel right. I didn't think it was going to do it any justice by ever boring the audience for any length of time. And, you know, you also want to make sure you capture every moment and the audience gets what they need. And so you do got to fine tune it. And sometimes you have to give up some scenes you really enjoyed. You're like, oh, it's like, you know what? In the end, did it really help the story move forward? No. Okay. Get rid of that. We don't need it. The editing took long. It was a long editing process because it did a lot of change to the story. You know, if you see it visually, you know, from the script to the actual screen, we did a lot of different adjustments to it that may not have even been on the script. When you saw it live, it was kind of, okay, we need to change a few things here from the script. It's just not working thematically at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the editing is, it's tight, and it does. It keeps moving. So, you know, there are one or two moments where we get a little bit of a respite to take a breath. But this is the kind of film you don't want to let it breathe too much because then you're going to lose the momentum. So excellent job with that. Now, I got a big question for you. How do you go from serving in the Navy to making movies? I mean, you've done multiple tours of duty overseas. I've known many military men who have gone into filmmaking, but I'm curious, and I know you started, you've done stunts, you worked on The Last Ship, one of my all-time favorite series, but I'm curious, how did you go from the Navy into filmmaking?
That's the difference, is I've always been a storyteller and writer who just so happened to join the military at a very young age. I'd have a career there. It wasn't vice versa. And because of that, you know, I've written a lot. Even while I was in the military, I used to write a lot. And one of the things I don't do, which is so surprising to people, is I don't write military content. I don't write real life events, operations. I don't write anything that's nonfiction. My passion's always been horror, mystery, thrillers. Mm-hmm. That's what I write. I don't like to use my military and infuse that into my writing. That's a different life of mine. And I don't want that to propel my writing at all. I want it to come from me as a writer, not from a military background. So, you know, that's really it. It's just my hard stance on just telling myself, I will not write these nonfiction stories that some people really like to see. It's just not me. It's like I'm strictly this kind of a writer, and I've always been this kind of a writer.
Wow. I love that. Compartmentalizing. Yeah. Never shall the twain meet.
So I'm writing a novel, a mystery novel right now, which I should have done by the end of the year. Yeah, I should be done with it. And that's my thing. It's mostly, I love telling stories. I love creating stories. I don't care what the platform is, whether it's TV, film, or book, or even a poem or a short story or a novella.
Now, I'm curious, because knowing as many military personnel as I have known over the decades and the training and the routine and the regimentation and the attention to detail. I'm curious, do you think that your time in the military has aided you as a director so that you know how to plan, logistically plan a production with efficiency?
Most definitely. Time management's everything in life saving too. So I would say that the military has definitely helped me in the filmmaking process in that sense of just how to manage people properly, because to be honest, filmmaking is easy. And a lot of people say it's not. No, it is. It's fun. It's not a job to me. It's exciting. And when you compare it to your previous life overseas, it's like, well, how can filmmaking be any harder than this? It's not. So enjoy it. Have fun with this. You stress out a lot less, or not at all, you know? And so you can manage stress a lot better. So when we have major issues on set, it's going to cause a lot of, time problems and money issues. It's about being able to think outside the box and go, okay, here's a fix. We can fix this right now. Or I'll make an adjustment. I'll build something to make something happen on the spot, and no one stress out. We'll make it work. Or if something breaks, we'll tinker something, we'll make it work. And so that's probably where it's really helped out in filmmaking, was having all that background in the military.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm curious, because you've done, this is now your second feature film that you've directed. You had done... is this a second feature? I know you did.
No,
some
that's the first.
This is the first feature. Now I know you had done some shorts. What kind of learning curve did you experience jumping into Heather?
Oh, a lot. I mean, that's the whole reason, why you have to knock out, a feature film. Shorts are great. But from start to finish of an entire production, there's a lot you're not going to know right away. I went to film school, but, there's things you're going to learn on the job, in person that you can't really teach or get that experience. And so, there's a lot that I took away from this. There's a lot that you take away and you go, okay, for next time, this is how I'm going to do it. It'll make it a lot easier. There's definitely a lot there. And that's why I appreciate, every moment of it, the compressed timeline, the compressed shooting schedule, everything, because you look at that and you go, okay, if you could do this with this amount of money, very little, and knock this out, then anything else is going to seem so much easier in the future.
Was there any one thing with the production of Heather that was the most challenging aspect of getting this film made?
Well, that's a hard one, because, almost every moment was a challenge, to be honest. There's a lot I didn't expect, and there's a lot of emotions running wild in some areas. I think, I don't know about challenges, we didn't have a location the entire time until the day before filming it.
Oh, no.
I wanted locations. I wanted a major location, which was the house.
Oh,
I did not secure that till the day before filming.
Wow. Yeah. That's nerve-wracking. Nerve-wracking.
No, it is. And me and the cinematographer is going out, looking at these houses and trying to look at you like, it's not going to work. Like, we got to film tomorrow. We have no location. And somehow we made it work.
Oh, my God. Because, you get the house the day before you're going to start filming. You still have to set dress and do everything else in the house that you need.
You do.
And that takes time. And if you don't have the location beforehand so you can do measurements and see what's going to fit and not fit, wow. Yeah,
we did have the location, but we lost it. We lost it last minute.
That's a killer. That is a killer. And yet, you just, no pun intended, you soldiered through.
Well, that's the idea, is that, trying to... and everything else, a bad situation. Can you make a bad situation into a better situation than what you would have had? And in this case, we did, because what we ended up with was better than what I had before planned out.
Yeah, that's the movie gods looking down on you, telling you this is the right thing to do. This is the right thing to do. Do you have a favorite moment in Heather of which you are most proud?
Yeah. Well, I would say there's two moments. There's actually two moments in the entire film that I'm most proud of. And I'm proud of them for two very different reasons. The first one is the final scene.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That one.
I
the
love
one that,
that.
Got close it all.
I love that scene.
It's always very hard, you know, you watch the movies and they do a really good job. And one of my sticking points I've always done, but the ending, why did they fail the ending? So I had to make sure the ending was the most powerful for the whole film, and what they gave me was so great. So I enjoyed filming that scene, and the performance that I got in that final scene out of them sold it all. The other part, the other scene, I won't tell you what it is. You need to watch it. But it was the biggest compliment I ever got on set. And it was a compliment of one of my crew members throwing up. Yeah. because
I know the scene. I know the scene.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they know it's fake too. Everybody knows it's fake. It's just not real. And yet when I put it live, it felt so real on camera live that still seems so real that the person threw up. I'm like, thank you. That is the best compliment I could have gotten right there.
That is, because that's what you do as a filmmaker. You strive to evoke emotion, to convey emotion. Yeah. And when you can make somebody sick, all right, you have done your job. Oh, yeah. My God. Oh,
like, I'll take that.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all. So now Heather is coming out into the world this week on Friday, November 8th. It'll be on all the all the digital platforms, of which there are too many to even name, but it'll be out there on all of them. So no excuse for people not to find it.
Amazon's the big one. Everybody knows Amazon. Yeah. You know, so.
And then all other kinds of weird, strange ones that I'm just seeing pop up. It amazes me. And I want to know who's getting money to, like, pay for all of this many streaming digital services. Because you know somebody
out there. I'm not on that part.
You know somebody out there in their home, they're paying for, like, every streaming platform they can find. But job just so well done, Anthony. What's next for you? Once this gets out in the world on Friday, what's next for you? Mm-hmm. Besides finishing your book?
Well, that's the thing. I write all the time. So I'm finishing the book, and then my manager's got another project that he wants me to look at. And so I'll take a hard look at that. I've seen some of the script, making some changes. So we'll see what we'll do with that one. But I'm always, you know, for me, it's not about filming anything. You know, I have to be attracted to the story. It has to fit me. It's not just have it, you know, on a credit. I don't care whether I film me every 10 years, every 5 years, or every 6 months. I got to connect with the story somehow. So working on that right now.
Well, I can't wait to see what you bring us next, because this is an incredible calling card. I got to tell you, an incredible calling card. And I'm looking forward to seeing more from you in the future. And I'm looking forward to your book.
Right, yes. Very good tree. It'll come out next year.
I will be on the lookout for it. Anthony, thank you so, so much. This has been so wonderful having you on the show today to talk about Heather.
It.
And now everybody can see it on Friday for themselves.
Yes, they can.
And they can try and figure out which scene prompted a crew member to throw up.
Not very hard.
It's not very hard. But I do have to say, the ending is one of the most beautiful endings to a film I've ever seen. That was just pure perfection. Job well done. Job well done. Thank you so much, Anthony. You go have a great rest of your day and opening day on Friday.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Anthony. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. Bye now.
And that was Anthony Rapinski talking about Heather. Brutal. Brutal horror. Well worth seeing. And once you start, you cannot look away. He really delivers on every front so that you are invested in the film. Now, we're switching gears to something light and happy and frothy and silly and fun. And it is, we're going to talk about Sally Wood. Sally Wood is, it's based on a true story. Writer-director Zach Gruber. This is basically his story of his dreams and coming to California and always loving Sally Kirkland, his favorite actress. And lo and behold, he comes to California. He wants to make movies, but above that, he wants to meet Sally Kirkland. And meet her he does. And spent many years as her assistant. Taking his own experience, he has now written. This is Sally Wood. It's just, look, this is Sally's world, and we're just part of it. If you know Sally, this is so Sally. She is radiant. She is funny. She has some incredible comedic moments in this film. But it just, it's just so true. And there are so many people who have come to California, who have come to Hollywood. They want to live out their dream. And this is somebody, Zach Gruber, who did that. And he did it with Sally Kirkland. And, you know, one of the heartfelt, most heartfelt aspects of the story that he, that Zach has written, because it is quote-unquote fictional, is that the character Zach, of course, the character of Zach, he dedicates himself, because Sally's career is not where he thinks it should be, nor where she thinks it should be. And he is determined to bring her back to the top and get her that Oscar that she has so long wanted. Just amazing. Amazing. So much fun. You feel joy when you watch this film. Zach has done an incredible job as writer, director of this. The cast is amazing. Shot this during COVID. And as you're going to hear Zach talk about, after, while he was in editing, he realized, uh-oh, we're short. I need more footage, but it's COVID and we can't get more. So, mother of invention, he came up with the idea of having all of these named celebrities doing basically Zoom interviews talking about Sally. Playing opposite Sally, Tyler Steelman playing the character of Zach is just incredible. Incredible. And the chemistry that Tyler and Sally have just endears the film to you even more. We then get great performances from Jennifer Tilly, who plays Zach's mom. And as a treat for you, we had been hoping that Sally could have joined us the other day for the interview, but she wasn't able to. But Zach's mom got on the phone during the interview. So you're going to hear Mrs. Gruber talking about how excited she was to have Jennifer Tilly play her character in Sally Wood. Kay Lenz pops up. Keith Carradine, Maria Conchita Alonso, the fabulous Michael Lerner. And of course, what is the film without him? Eric Roberts is in it. I know he's getting close to hitting that 900 film mark. I know he is. So the cinematographer is Matthias Fein. The entire film is kept so light and bright and colorful. And that also allows Zach to bring in, and a lot of this is shot in Sally's own apartment, to bring in all of her magnificent paintings that she does. So we get to see a lot of Sally's own artwork in this film. Andrew Wilsack was the editor, does an amazing job with this. And James Covell does the music. The score is as light and as upbeat as the visual tonal bandwidth is. The whole thing is just a joy. It is brilliant fun. That is exactly what it is. It is brilliant fun and so sweet. So, instead of me rambling on, I'll let you take a listen to my exclusive interview with writer-director Zach Gruber talking about Sallywood.
Hi, Zach. It's Debbie. How are you?
Debbie, hi. Yeah, I'm good.
Well, something else that is all good, Zach?
Yeah?
Oh, my God. I love Sallywood. This...
Oh, my gosh. Thank
this
you.
Film, number one, oh. It is so Sally.
Wow.
It is so Sally. In the tone. And so much of this, she's not acting. This is Sally.
This is Sally, yeah.
But this is, it is brilliant fun. It is so sweet. You've got so much emotion packed in. Your casting is fabulous. I love
wow,
the veteran. The veteran actors are great. You've got Jennifer, you've got Kay. Eric, who is in everything. Sally's got a way to go to catch up with him on his IMDb of over, what, 900? She's only at 270 or something. Keith Carradine, who I love, Keith. Maria Conchita Alonso, we don't see her that often.
No,
it was lovely seeing Michael Lerner. Got these great veterans, but then you give us Tyler Steelman as Zach. He is such a joy as this this energetic, deer in headlights, idolization, and the chemistry between Tyler and Sally is terrific. You did
wow,
such a good job, Zach.
You.
Such a good job.
Thank you. Yeah, I have to tell you, we auditioned countless actors for that role because, you know, first of all, can I just talk and answer the question now?
Oh, you can talk all you want.
Okay.
I do everything
okay.
informal.
So basically, not only are they playing me, which is, you know, I kind of set that aside, but the main thing is they have to have a magical chemistry and harmony with Sally.
Yeah.
So, you know, there has to be sparks flying, and whoever plays Zach has to make her laugh and vice versa. And you know when the magic is in the room.
Yeah.
And when he came in and auditioned, he actually auditioned on her bed with her. She insisted that he lay on her bed with her for the audition, so we had cameras and lights all around her bed, and she's on one side, and he's right next to her, and it was completely dazzling to watch. And he didn't even know her. She didn't know him either. And I just looked over at Stephen Wolf, the producer, and lip-synced the words, "Oh my God!" Because I was just so excited and surprised because he was actually the very last person we were going to see. And he was, you know, actor number 100 out of 100. And I thought, please, God, let this one be the one. And he was. And I'm delighted with what he does in this film.
Oh,
and by the way, I saw many actors for the role who I thought were terrific actors,
mm-hmm.
but they just weren't right for the role for whatever reasons.
Yeah, with this film,
they were too hunky, or they were too, you know, tall, or they were too whatever it was, you know. And he just had all the right elements.
Chemistry on this one is so key and so important. You had to have the right blend. And I've got to say, you had a great casting director with Valerie on this one.
Thank you.
I adore Valerie. I've interviewed Valerie before when she branched into directing with her short film, Dirty Bomb, that she wrote and directed. Oh, my God. And I know she had wanted to do a feature, and so far she hasn't been able to do that. And I wish she could because she really is good as a writer and director, in addition to being a casting director.
She does so many things well, I agree.
Yeah. The fact you had Valerie as your casting director is fabulous. That gives you a leg up, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
But
thank you.
you've got Tyler, you've got this great cast. When did you start writing this or get the idea for Sallywood?
Well, first of all, I lived it. So yeah. I moved to L.A. in 2002, and that's when I became Sally's assistant. So the movie takes place basically now, though. It didn't take place in 2002 specifically. But all the things that happened on screen with Sally and I really happened, even right down to the dialogue, which I have an elephant's memory. So mm-hmm. I remembered everything she had said to me over the years and everything I'd said back. And I just decided I'm going to write all this down. And I went to a birthday party in 2014 of a friend of mine in L.A., and her name is Jill. She's actually the executive producer of the film. And she was having a birthday party, and she said, I'd like everyone to tell a funny story about their life, a five-minute short story, something funny that happened to you. And so I told the story about how Sally Kirkland hired me to be her assistant on the spot. And everyone in the room was laughing hysterically, and they said to me, write that as a script and make that as a movie. It's going to be a hilarious film. And I went home and I just started fade in. You know, I just typed it on my final draft on my laptop. I did the whole screenplay in 3 months, the first draft.
Wow.
And when I was done, I handed it to Sally and I said, would you read this and let me know if you'd like to play yourself in this? And she said, give me the weekend. And at the end of the weekend, she said, you've written me as the world's biggest narcissist, and I can't wait to play myself this way. And I said, oh, thank God. And she said, yes, when are we making this? And I said, well, as soon as the stars align, you know? I mean, because you need funding, and you need casting, and you need, you know, crew. There's many, many things. But I thought, well, I have Sally already in. Now it's just a matter of getting the other elements lined up, the other 5 million elements. And I did. And what happened was, I was living in L.A. for about 15 years, and then I had to move to Florida to help my parents because my father had a very rapid Alzheimer's disease.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it was completely debilitating, and my mother needed my help. And so she said, please move to Florida and help me with him. They had bought a place in Florida, so I moved there. And I put Sallywood on hold. This was 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So while I was in Florida, I found myself with a little more time on my hands than I had in L.A. So I decided to take one of my short film scripts and shoot it. I'd written all these short film scripts when I lived in L.A., which won many awards, but I never filmed any of them. They just sat on a shelf as writing samples. You know, when you're a writer, you have to have samples.
Mm-hmm.
So I called my best friend, who's a cinematographer, Matthias Thane, and I said, come to... He's also a Sallywood cinematographer. And I said, come to my little town of Vero Beach, Florida, and I want to film one of these short films. We did it, and as soon as it was done, it was accepted to the Cannes Film Festival in France. I was in shock because this little film, the little short film, 10-minute comedy, got into the world's fanciest film festival. And it was made with, you know, a hodgepodge of people, some of which didn't even know what they were doing. And I thought, how is this possible? How
oh
is it possible
goodness.
That I'm premiering at Cannes? Well, when you premiere at Cannes, the whole world sees you as a legit filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, well, what are you going to film next? You should do a feature. And I went, actually, I have a feature. And Debbie, the stars just aligned, you know, and the funding came in, and all the different people who needed to be part of the film showed up, and we sent the script out to Jennifer Tilly, Eric Roberts, Keith Carradine, Michael Lerner, Maria Conchita Alonso, Kay Lenz, and they all said, we're in, and then Rufus Wainwright, who I met on the red carpet of the Judy premiere. Remember the movie Judy with Renee Zellweger?
Absolutely.
He was standing next to me, and he said, oh my gosh, Sally Kirkland's standing next to you. I love her from Anna. And I said, I'm her plus one. So I introduced Rufus Wainwright to Sally. They become instant friends. And then and then I end up with songs by him in the film. So it was just wonderful miracle after wonderful miracle. And here we have the film that's now, through 2024, made its way through all these national film festivals and has won 38 awards. And we're about to do a week at the Lemleys in L.A., and we're getting very close to distribution. So I have to tell you, you know, I feel like I've been pregnant for several years now with this film, like an elephant pregnancy. I keep comparing myself to elephants. I don't know what that's about. But I now have a bouncing baby film, and people like my baby, and it's a great feeling.
Now, you know, once you had this cast, Zach, you had all the actors in place, you had money in place, or at least part of it in place, so you could start shooting. And I have to say, I really love what I see from Matthias as your cinematographer. With your visual tonal bandwidth, you keep this entire film light, bright, breezy, natural, and flowing. You and Matthias, you don't do anything fancy with camera work. You let the performances, you let Sally and Tyler really shine.
Wow, so thank you for that. That was my goal.
Well, you succeeded.
I mean, it's a simple friendship story, and I don't know what it is about me. Maybe it's my own relationship with my mother or my grandparents, but all of my stories, all of my films are about multi-generational friendships. Mm-hmm. They're all about much older people, usually much older women, and their friendships with much younger men. And my whole mind and sort of soul and body, I'm not a dark individual. I'm a very bright, happy person. So I think that's reflected in the film. I'm not cynical. I'm not interested in, you know, creating harrowing stories. There's enough of that out there, and other people do it great. And all I want to do is make comedies, but comedies with heart,
mm-hmm.
that really connect with people emotionally.
That's what I said earlier. It's like, there is a sweetness to this. It is refreshing, and it's just so light and bright and so wonderful to watch. And this is where Matthias's work and what the two of you worked out to develop that visual tonal bandwidth is just marvelous. So I'm curious what your conversations with him were like to develop and stay pretty classic with your shots. You really pretty much stay in the mid-shot, a two-shot, whether it's Sally and Zach, whether it's Zach and Tom, and then, but for the interstitial interviews, quote-unquote, with Kay's character, Eric's character, of course, then Eric, you know, lets loose in there in the third act, and he's hilarious.
Gosh, I know.
You know, Keith, but it's very clean. It's clean and sharp.
I wanted to keep the visual narrative as clean and as simple and as much about the actors as possible, not be, you know, overly fancy or overly artsy or anything like that. I feel like, in a way, Sally Wood could make a great stage play.
Oh, yeah.
Because we have these interesting characters in, you know, just a few locations, a lot of interiors. And it was the first film ever made on what's called the Black Magic camera, which was a brand new model at the time when we filmed it. And it's very exciting that we were the first film to create a movie with this beautiful
Love Black Magic cameras. They are fantastic.
Wow.
And they're affordable.
They are. And we had, you know, Matthias and his camera crew, I was really blessed because, listen, I just just want to work with good people. I don't care if you're a college student or if you're an Academy Award winner. If you're good, I want to work with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so we had the whole gamut from college student to Academy Award winner on our crew and our cast. And it was really fun, quite frankly, looking back at it, at the production. This great mix of people who I completely love and would love to work with any of them again.
Now, something else that you and Matthias also paid attention to, especially with the locations that you selected, besides Sally's apartment, which it's just wall-to-wall Sally, all of her paintings.
And that is the actual
Yes, I know.
Yeah, you know.
So seeing that with all the color and the vibrancy, I like that you extended that with your exteriors. You have some beautiful patio shots with the bougainvillea off to the right on the side of a patio in a scene.
Oh, that's right.
You keep the lightness and the color, you keep that vibrancy of life that Sally exudes. You keep that
Thank you.
In here.
Debbie, you notice everything. I'm so impressed.
I try, Zach. And then you counter that, this openness, this vibrancy, you counter that with the scenes in Maine with Jennifer and Lenny as Joanne and Dave, Zach's parents. And we get it's very intimate. And
yeah.
Sally's apartment is vibrant in color. It's not a huge apartment, but you have carpet area. You have open space there because of the furniture configuration. In Joanne and Dave's house, there isn't that open space there. Everything, it's much cozier. It's warmer. You're in Maine. It's going to get cold in the winter. So I like that contrast, and then you've
got... That was on purpose, because for me, my life in Maine, where I'm actually sitting in my living room in Maine right now, it's very cozy. We have a lot of antiques, a lot of oak, a lot of wood. We have animal heads on the walls.
Oh, my God!
I don't know if that's politically correct, but it's very Maine, you know what I mean? Like, everything here is... we've got a gorgeous big stone fireplace, and... The colors outside are all changing, the leaves snowing. It's where you want to hunker down and be cozy. It's a very different vibe than Hollywood. An extreme of another planet.
But I love how you give us that distinction and how you change the color palette as well. You've got the more ecru or cream colored walls in Maine with the green trim and the woods. And then that really pops with the red for Christmas and the dinner and even the food.
What you're saying right now, because my primary career is I'm a fine artist. I'm a painter. And so I exhibit in galleries and I teach art. I've been teaching art since 1990. So art teaching was my first career and first love, and making art is my first love. So I want to, when I'm filmmaking, I feel like I'm painting, quite frankly.
And you are.
So I'm thinking in terms of color and texture and movement and shape and composition, just like I would on a canvas. And you're going to think I'm crazy, but when I'm directing movies, I'm actually wearing my art smock. I wear my art aprons as I'm directing. If you see any behind-the-scenes shots, I'm always with an apron, because I feel like this is my creative laboratory. Plus, I love the pockets in the front.
I was just going to mention pockets. I mean, that is rule number one. You must have pockets. So... I know that's the ulterior reason as to why you wear your apron for the pockets. I know this. It shows you have a great eye for color and texture. You give us texture. And this is also, it speaks volumes as to your relationship with Sally because of her own eye for color and texture as an artist as well. So,
you know. She's an artist too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Initially connected over that in our gallery.
So just absolutely wonderful. Now, once you get this shot, what was your editing process like here? Were you editing as you went? Did you wait till you had all the footage and then edit? walk me through your editing process, because you have so many gems here with Sally and with Tyler and the comedy that comes out. You don't want to lose those beats. You don't want to lose the sweetness, but you also don't want to overstay.
Right. So I have to tell you, again, I really lucked out with my editor. His name is Andrew Wilsack. This is his very first feature that he's ever edited. I had to actually, he started editing under normal circumstances, and then COVID hit, and it wasn't even called COVID, it was just like this virus.
Yeah.
And then the lockdown, and suddenly he had to take his entire editing system out of my producer's office and go to his apartment in Los Angeles, and I was on the East Coast, and for a while, we couldn't be together at all. So I was editing with him remotely via Zoom, which is really, really challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, many months later, I went to LA, and I went to his apartment, and I spent day after day with him in his guest bedroom where he'd set up his editing system. And the whole making of Sallywood and the editing was so unconventional because of the whole COVID, you know, pandemic. Even those shots of Eric Roberts and all the characters looking at the camera, saying their lines at the camera,
mm-hmm.
all those were born out of a necessity for more footage, but we didn't have any way to do pickup shots
right.
with these actors because of the COVID lockdown. So we had to send all the equipment to their house in a hazmat box. And they had to unpack it, do their own lighting, makeup, wardrobe, hair, and then just say lines that I wrote, and some of them improv lines, into the camera, which I was connected to on the East Coast via Zoom, and it was completely nuts. But it's not how movies are normally made, but we had then all this footage of them talking to the camera, and we cleverly figured out a way to make it that they're being recorded on a phone.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of see the phone settings on there.
Yes.
Like, that basically those interview snippets are us in present day, and the film timeline happened just before that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting how we pieced this puzzle together.
Wow.
Because after we wrapped and the world shut down, it was, we were like, how do we get more footage? Oh my gosh, this is going to be really hard. And we managed to do it, but of course, you know, with all the pandemic and post-pandemic, whatever you want to call it, delays, it's just now being born into the public, and so be it.
Yeah.
Honestly, I feel like this is the right time for it right now.
I agree with you. It is. People need a distraction from the geopolitical situation, from elections, from
all of that.
And this is so bright and entertaining and fun.
Yeah.
It is a perfect escape and distraction. And while this is quote-unquote fictional, the truth of Sally comes through. Sally is Sally, no matter what. Sally is Sally. And that comes through. It shines through. So you get a little feeling of reality with fantasy. And it's a really nice feeling that you get when you watch this because you have achieved that.
Thank you. It is a nice, you know, it's very, very rare that an actress plays herself in the lead role.
Yeah.
I can almost think of no other examples in cinema history, but there has to be one out there somewhere, but, you know, if someone knows, please let me know. So it was really, this film is kind of a hybrid in a way, because it has a little bit of documentary element
mm-hmm.
going on,
yeah.
and it's also slightly a biopic. romantic, but it's also, I mean, it's thoroughly a comedy, but it has layers of drama in it. And you know, we're looking at this real person mm-hmm. who's looking back at her life, but normally actors would portray themselves maybe in a better light.
Mm-hmm.
And she's so fearless to show herself warts and all, you know, like a stalled career, a loneliness, the victim of ageism all over the place, you know, having nobody who's believing in her and her team, like her agent, you know, the people she's going to, at that final monologue that she gives where everyone turns away from her.
In the bar, yeah.
Kind of like heartbreaking stuff going on, and she just wanted to go the distance with it and just really run with it. And wow, I mean, that's a special thing that she is just unafraid like that.
Yeah, and there aren't a lot of people that would be willing to do that. And as I'm watching this and watching as you're filming the film within a film, because Zach's roommate Tom is a filmmaker and he's got this great zombie alien film that's happening. That sequence where she is in a spacesuit with the black wig that is just like all over the place. She is,
oh my God,
that scene is hilarious. Hilarious. And then she's in the hospital bed. She comes back and she is dressed like Cleopatra, an Egyptian princess. She's an empress in a hospital bed. And you've got a bimbo who comes in, Pound Cake, the porn actress, who's a wannabe actress. And she comes in and she can't even get her line right. And every time somebody screws up and Sally recites her line about, "I have a gun, I know how to use it." And I was just waiting for her to really have a gun and use it. This is so tailor-made for her. Nobody could have played her but her.
That's right. I agree. I agree. Do you want to hear a funny thing?
Oh, please.
Jennifer Tilly told me that when she was given the script, she read it, she loved it, and she called my producer and said, "Oh, I can't. I really would like to play the role of Sally Kirkland." And Stephen, my producer, Stephen Wolfe, he said, "No, Sally Kirkland's playing Sally Kirkland." And Jennifer said, "Well, then who am I going to play? I don't want to be the porn star. I've done that." And he said, "No, you'd be playing Joanne, the mother of Zach." And she agreed. And, you know, let me just say, I love Jennifer Tilly. Like, I've been such a huge fan of hers from Bullets Over Broadway and Bound and Liar Liar and all these films. And now she's having this huge resurgence.
Yes.
From the Chucky TV series. And she's on the Real Housewives show. She's kind of all over now. And she's so smart and cool. And by the way, my mother, who's in the other room right now, is like, the fact that Jennifer Tilly's playing my mother is really, really funny. I think my mother was feeling very happy about the fact that an actress as wonderful as her was playing mom.
I was just going to ask you, how does your mom feel about that? That she's got Jennifer Tilly playing her. So, and I think Jennifer is such a great comedic actress.
Uh-huh.
She...
Well, Debbie, hold on one second. I'm going to put Mom on the phone and she can tell you how she thinks about Sally Wood and Jennifer Tilly playing her.
Okay.
Give you a journal.
Debbie?
Hello, Mom.
Hi. Well, I guess I'm on the phone now with you. So, I was flattered. She's a great comedic actress, and she plays me, you know, over the top because it's Jennifer Tilly. I'm not quite the personality that she plays me as, but I was flattered, and she's a wonderful woman, and it, you know, it's just a nice thing in my old age to have someone that was a sex symbol because I'm older now, you know, it's, yeah.
But
the hammer kind of goes away, so.
But, hey, look at that.
It was fun to see her, you know, in that role.
And, you know, you've got a son who, he made his dreams come true.
Well, I hope so. He did a phenomenal job, and he had a lot of stars that he had to direct, and, oh, it's been quite a journey.
Oh, well.
You know, through COVID and everything else that's happened since he started this 6 years ago. Good Lord.
Well,
unbelievable.
You should be very proud of him, because this film, it is so much fun. It is so sweet. There's so much heart in it. And it makes you laugh and it makes you smile. Any filmmaker that can do that is okay by me.
Yeah, that's right. And we need more of that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we do.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, I'm going to hand the phone back to Zach, and it's wonderful talking to you.
Wonderful speaking with you as well.
Thank you, honey. Here you go.
Back to Zach. That rhymes.
Back to Zach.
Mom's first press interview.
Look at that. I think that's great.
You know, Mom's one of the executive producers of the film, too.
Ooh.
Yeah.
With Mom as executive producer and you as writer-director, if there was ever an issue popping up, was she an involved producer? Could she put her foot down?
She was very hands-off. What's funny is, when I went to L.A. to film it, she said, just finish it and make it good. Like, that's all she said. And I was like, oh, those are very clear and simple and very big directives. Okay, finish it and make it good. Okay.
Okay, well, you followed Mom's directions quite well, Zach.
Oh, thanks.
You really did. Now, I would be remiss not to ask you about the music in the film. You've got needle drops happening, but you also have score happening.
Yes. Yeah, so I am very inspired by all of the comedy films that Woody Allen did over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I love watching Hannah and Her Sisters and Manhattan Murder Mystery, and the list is long. Both over Broadway with Jennifer Tilly. Anyway, they all have a jazz score, and he's so consistent with that. So in all of his films, he has these classic, you know, songs, recordings from like the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, great jazz music, and he himself is a jazz musician. And honestly, I wanted to just go that route. So Jim Cavell, C-O-V-E-L-L, Jim Cavell, is our composer. And we interviewed a whole bunch of composers, and I really felt like I wanted... There's something about jazz which I find really... It does something to my imagination. It's the notes. It's the kind of the playfulness of the notes, and it's... I wanted it kind of warm and breezy and a little bit vintage sounding.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the score that Jim Cavell put together for this. In addition to Rufus Wainwright's songs and Tony Basil, she does the opening theme song as he's driving across the country where the opening credits are. It's called Breakaway. It's from 1966, a lost song that Tony Basil recorded back then. And so I have this wonderful array of very warm, interesting, beautiful music. Smokey Miles does the final song called Sallywood, which is in the closing credits. And he's a friend of Sally's, a very close friend. In fact, the night I met her at her art gallery, he was there playing. And when I asked him, would you do a song, he just recorded that in one take, I think, in his bedroom, sent it to me, and now it's in the film. I thank you so much. Music is... I play music all day long, Debbie. I love music so much. I listen to everything, a huge variety of... I just went to see Joni Mitchell perform at the Hollywood Bowl last week, and Annie Lennox was on stage with her with Elton John, and it blew my mind. So music is a big part. I want it to be a big part of everything I do.
Well, it definitely is a big part of this film, as is the fact that you're shooting in Sally's apartment. A lot of people who aren't familiar with her paintings, with her own artwork, they get to see so many of them.
Right.
You showcase art.
I wonder if this movie will actually bring attention to her artwork.
It should.
I think it will. I think, it has. I showed it earlier this year in Florida, and people there said, maybe we could do a show at our local art museum of her of her paintings and then show the film and have her speak. And I thought, oh, my God, I love that idea.
That's a wonderful idea. A wonderful idea, Zach. You should follow up on that.
I will. I'm going to.
Now, the big question now, the film is going to be playing at Lemley for a week, starting what day next week?
So, November 7th, which is a Thursday, it will be at Lemley's Royal Cinema, which is in West L.A., and then from the 8th to the 14th, it's going to run that whole calendar week at the Encino Lemley's.
Now, what do we have?
I'm playing every day at 4:30, I've just been told.
Well, that is lovely to know.
On the 7th, it will be at 7 p.m.
Okay, at the Royal.
At the Royal. And that's going to be a big, splashy, fun event with a Q&A afterwards.
Are you going to be there?
Oh, sure. Oh, my gosh, yes. And Sally will, too.
I have no doubt. She will make sure she is strong enough to be there. And in good health to be there.
Well, if anyone can get her there, I can.
Zach, this has been just so incredible getting to speak with you today about Sally Wood. You have
done a
wonderful, wonderful job with this film. It is so entertaining. I just know people are going to love it when they see it. And it might not get Sally an Oscar nomination, but one never knows.
One never knows. Maybe an Independent Spirit Award nomination.
For next year. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So.
I'm just such an optimist. I feel like anything can happen. And when I say that, I mean anything good.
Yeah, not anything bad. Anything good.
Anything good can happen.
Zach, this has been so, so wonderful. I hope we get to talk again in the future. Now, this doesn't have a full distribution deal yet, does it?
It doesn't, but it will hopefully within the, next couple months, and I'll keep you posted.
Once you get a distribution deal and it's going to be out there, you can come onto the live show or whatever, or we can do a pre-record again. And we can talk more about Sally Wood to open eyes for the bigger audience that it'll get.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we are going to throw our hat into the ring for awards season, so we'll see what happens.
You should. Just remember, it is brilliant fun and extraordinarily sweet. So Sally needs pull.
That.
If Sally wants pull quotes, there, she has them.
I might use your quote on our movie trailer.
You can use anything out of my mouth. You can use Zach. Once it comes out of my mouth, it's out there. You're free to use it. I don't retract. It's
no, you don't strike me as the type.
No, I don't. So this has been a pure joy, and we will chat again in the future, good sir.
Okay. Thank you, Debbie. I look forward to when the interview airs and experiencing it all over again.
It'll air on Monday.
Oh, okay, cool. It's the beginning of our journey with this, so you're part of it now.
Anything I can do to help you and Sally on this journey, I will do for you. Thank you so much, Zach. You have a great rest of your night.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks.
Lots of love.
Bye-bye.
And that was the exuberant and talented Zach Gruber talking about Sally Wood. And as a reminder, Sally Wood, there's a one-week limited theatrical engagement starting November 8th at the Lemley Town Center 5 in Encino. And then this Thursday, the 7th, there's a Q&A with Zach and with Sally that will be at the Lemley Royal in Santa Monica. And I encourage you, there's nothing like seeing Sally. And she's always a lot of fun. And as you just heard, Zach's exuberance and joy is infectious. So, and we will keep you, I will keep you advised on distribution for Sallywood. But in the meantime, if you're in LA, you have a chance to see the film now, this Thursday, the 7th in Santa Monica, or starting Friday, the 8th in Encino. So check it out if you can. You will not be disappointed and you'll have a good time. So that is all the time we have for today. Of course, we went over. And I have no clue what we're doing next week. I'm waiting to hear. I have no talent booked for next week. You might get pre-records. I'm not sure. Pam's making a face in there. A hmm face. But now when I hear back from some publicist, I'll find out who we're going to have. We're counting down the days to the end of year 10 for Behind the Lens. We've got three more shows in November and only two shows in December. And then we're out for 10 years. So you don't want to miss what's coming. So until next week, I'm Debbie Elias. This is Behind the Lens.